moving from some compulsion of inadequacy in his own nature. Now, this inadequacy doesn't always mean that the person is really inferior. That is another interesting problem. It means that the person does not believe sufficiently in himself. That perhaps he has abilities, but has so negative a personality that his abilities are never recognized and the opportunities which he really deserves never come to him. Very often also, ability is housed within a most forbidding appearance. The individual's personality is against him. He is unable to give sufficient sense of acceptance to other people. An outstanding example of that problem was the great composer Mozart. He was a most unprepossessing looking person. And although his genius was tremendous, he was never really accepted, as persons of lesser ability were accepted. There was also a tremendous psychic stress in this musician. For while he was a very young child and should have been orienting socially, he was required to pound the piano morning, noon, and night. The ambitions of his parents had a great deal to do with the rebellion and escapism that became in many ways an almost psychotic force in his life. So all kinds of reasons are present. Reasons which come out through other types of escape also. Dreams, visions, and hallucinations. For years we've had an awful epidemic of this in religious movements, particularly those which have a tendency to bring the individual into the presence of mysteries which he cannot understand very well. The more involved, mysterious, or metaphysical the religion, the more difficulty many people have in approaching it with a reasonable type of mind. But we cannot blame the religion in every case, because in most instances, the religion is only a basket or a net which has caught these people. The individual turned to religion as an escape. He turned to religion, as I know some did, simply because it was a legitimate way of being away from home. This comes down to that. Other individuals turned to religion because they believed that it would give an opportunity for them to extrovert some kind of ability which they had or believed that they had. But this type of extroversion usually got them into difficulty. The pressure within themselves set up symbolisms, and these individuals became subject to various types of symbolic obsessions. They found that all kinds of strange and mysterious things were happening to them. And in a good many instances, these mysterious happenings followed a pattern. And this pattern was that of religious importance. These people developed messianic complexes. Being bound in some rather humdrum condition, with very little opportunity to exercise perhaps a fairly strong ambition, these persons suddenly found in religion an opportunity to become a leader. They could found some kind of a cult or a belief, and no one is so foolish that in time he cannot have at least two disciples. So these people developed little spheres of influence, which were their escapes. And these escapes compensated, perhaps, for poor home life, broken homes, lack of financial means, very drab surroundings, and perhaps not very ingratiating personalities. But after all, much can be forgiven in a prophet. And what appears to the average person to be a bad disposition takes on the appearance of a high dedication when it is associated with religion. So we know that religion really became a scrap basket for escapists. It has always been this way. It's nothing especially new. But it should help us to realize that the cause is not religion. The cause is the interpretation of persons. And this hanging upon religion as a last escape from reality. Now, what are all these people trying to escape? In most instances, it is some kind of reality. You do not do unreal things unless you are trying to escape from something that is just too much for you to carry, or you think it is. Reality is the heaviest burden that most people have to bear. The reality of who they are, and what they are, and what they can do, and what they cannot do, and why they should be proud of themselves, or why there is nothing for them to be proud of. These realities come to an individual who is utterly untrained to receive them or accept them. Most persons have not developed their own potentials as they should have. For because society never demanded it, and because perhaps they were too lazy to be interested in it at the right time, these people drift into middle life with extremely limited abilities, and perhaps with the best of good intentions, but no way of fulfilling any of these intentions. Their advice is abominable, their suggestions are impossible, yet they mean well. They want to help, but for some reason, everyone they help gets worse. This is something that psychologists know about, the ministers know about it, the world knows about it. But up to now, there has been no standardized program or method set up to cope with the real facts. Churches today are bringing in pastoral counselors, and many ministers are now being educated with psychological courses as part of the curriculum. The theological seminary is going to probably drop a few of those old courses in Americ or something of that nature and try a few courses in social psychology. But actually, while this may help and can provide something, it would seem to indicate that religion has very little confidence in itself as religion. It is falling back upon science. It is taking the same procedures as the non-religious person, as much as to say, the needs of these people are not spiritual needs at all. And if the religious person is in trouble, give him tranquilizers as you give them to everyone else. Or send him to a psychiatrist, or institutionalize him, or follow in the same procedures that were set up by a series of somewhat atheistic psychologists 50 or 75 years ago. This does not seem to be a solution. It is not a solution scientifically, so why should it be when the theologian applies the same technique? The answer does not lie here at all. The religious solution to these pressures is part of its own inheritance. Religion is something different. It may have philosophical overtones, but it is not basically a philosophy. It may have scientific elements in it, but it is not basically a science. And where efforts are made to confuse these values, everything is worse off. The contribution that religion bestows upon the individual is a kind of internal reorganization of his standards of living. This reorganization is not in terms of some academic program. It is the individual's coming to face the larger realities of life. What the religion can do for the person is to make him realize the importance of the things he is doing now. That the securities of life, the values of life, the good consequences which he looks forward to, are reserved for those who meet the obligations of the day with serenity and insight. There is nothing that we have to run away from except our own ignorance. And there is really no way of successfully escaping that. Wherever we go, we take it with us. Any unhappiness that we seek to leave behind outruns us and gets to the same end as soon as we do. There is no solution here. Religion should set up its own formula to handle all types of neurotics. One of the things that religion has always taught man is the dignity of faith, and that faith, in a mysterious way, is our acceptance of a universal plan. A plan which to the religionist arises in the divine will. A plan which is right and proper, whether we like it or not. To stay with the plan and fight it through is to become strong. To run away from the plan is simply to be weaker. If we run away often enough, we reach a state where we can do nothing else. Escape becomes instinctive. We can no longer stop our own feet as they hasten off. Consequently, problems are very often nothing but our own reaction to normal and reasonable situations. In every situation that is natural and proper, there may be expenses, but there are also compensations. The individual who has to give up a little of himself to maintain his home suffers a small loss, but if his attitudes are right, he enjoys a great gain. He finds that in the fulfillment of the natural plan of life, he grows, strengthens his character, and becomes capable of a deeper appreciation of values. The person who is forever escaping is deprived of the joy of the securities of those who stay with it and master the situations that confront them. The individual, for example, who has a natural inborn dislike for work, and there are a good many of them, finds hundreds of reasons for changing jobs. If his dislike for work is strong enough, the employer also finds reasons for getting rid of him. But even if this emergency does not rise, the person seldom stays anywhere more than a few months, where he is able to manufacture enough dissatisfactions to move him out of the employment. I know persons who have made a successful career of this. They can boastfully say that they have never kept one job for any length of time during a lifetime. And because of this, and because they remained in a strange negative way their own boss, meaning the fact that they were always able to quit when they wanted to, these persons believed they had achieved a victory. But they had attained a victory at the loss of all of the securities of life which they should have enjoyed. They never had even the physical things that they might have had. They never had any respect for society. They never developed any orderly habits. The individual who has this kind of a mind, always escaping, usually has a home that is as confused and disordered as himself. Everything fitted together, this person or these persons simply cheat themselves. They run away from a self-discipline which they all need and assume that freedom is freedom from responsibility, when this is not the case at all. Consequently, if a generation becomes too addicted to escape mechanisms, it will weaken the entire social structure. It will cause the person to be so continuously dissatisfied that he can scarcely maintain himself and will contribute very little to any collective purpose or project. He will be dissatisfied, he will be against everything, and most of all, he will be sick. His health will reflect all of these problems, and one of the commonest phases of the escapist's health problem is his constant addiction to health fads. By the time he has to move from one fad to another for half a lifetime, his digestion is ruined as well as his disposition. What do we actually need? We need the thing we don't want to take: orders. We need to be under the supervision of something that is strong enough to control us. And also sufficiently good to provide us no excuse for rebellion. In this world, there is nothing that can really give us this kind of discipline. A top sergeant in the army can do fairly well. But even such a person has a very limited area of disciplining. And, of course, the soldiers are only waiting, hopefully, for the day when they will be out from under his tyranny. A few of the wiser ones, however, learn to respect him. Mostly, discipline has to come from allegiance to some conviction. And this problem of allegiance may require some rather careful thinking. Religion is about the only thing that can really give it to us. And wherever anything else takes the place of religion in giving it to us, that other thing becomes a religion, at least for us, just as communism has become a religion in these socialized states. It has taken the place of a spiritual allegiance. An allegiance we have to have. And it is best for us if it is an allegiance to something just. The more strength we have, the more we enjoy being strong. There is very little desire to escape from a situation with which we are well adjusted. It is this lack of adjustment that causes the discomfort that makes us run away. Religion has certain things to offer. First of all, it has a tremendous moral force. Like it or not, believe it or not, 3/4 of mankind is dedicated to religion of some kind. The Christian, in associating himself with his faith, associates himself with 875 million other human beings. This is important. The royal numbers does not necessarily mean quality. Numbers means weight. It means the fact that the individual is not alone. He cannot regard himself as being simply a crack-brained adherent to something. He belongs to a motion that the majority of mankind regards as good, whether they practice it or not. In addition to this tremendous body of Christendom, there are enough other religions to bring the religious population of the world to over 2.5 billion. And this is allowing a goodly number for the non-believers. Those, therefore, who find some interest in religion do not need to regard themselves as eccentric or gullible. It is only that they need to regard themselves as having the same needs as the majority of other human beings. All human beings need food and clothing and shelter. They also need friendship and faith. These are the essentials of life. Any person who cuts himself off from these essentials is just doing himself an ill service. Now, it's also quite possible that a sophisticated generation growing up at this time cannot accept without question the beliefs of their ancestors. This means that there are progressives in religion. There always have been. Luther was a progressive. Calvin was a progressive. Each of these individuals found it necessary to adapt faith to the requirements of a contemporary world. We may still have to do this. Religions evolve as people do. And a religion that stands still is soon extinct. But it does not follow that because we have to adapt, that we have to deny. It is perfectly possible for the average person to develop a strong religion, either within the body of the religious structure of the world by selecting a group close to his interests, or by making the study of religion a valid activity of his own. His own search for faith being a major labor of his life. And in this way, in searching for faith, he is not running away. He is looking for answers. Now, some will say, of course, that religion is itself a great escape, that it is an escape from scientific realism, that it is an escape from a mechanistic industrialism. But most persons who have been religious since the beginning of time have not been escapists. They have been strong in their sense of duty. And religion has strengthened them rather than weakened them. It may have made some of them intolerant. It may have made some of them bigoted. But for the majority, it gave stability. It gave patience. It gave willingness to sacrifice self. And in each of the religions, there has been some heroic personality that has arisen. A savior, a prophet, or a sage, whose own conduct exemplified his faith. And these noble examples have benevolently influenced hundreds of millions of human beings in the last 3,000 years of history. Religion, therefore, when it is adjusted by a definite effort of the individual to his own needs, when the understanding of life arises from one of the great systems which have given courage and integrity to the ages, the person has a pretty reasonable probability of gaining a kind of character which will sustain him in his hours of need. He will find inducement of example, of belief, and of living, inducement to patience, to generosity, to forbearance, to forgiveness. He will find more and more emphasis upon virtues attained, and less emphasis upon indifference to character. There are a great many cases recorded in which religion has contributed to recovery from mental and emotional ailments. In fact, the present trend in psychology is also a new and divided allegiance. Today, many psychologists, having had many years of experience and countless failures, have come to the conclusion that religion is an important element in all forms of psychotherapy. The individual who is naturally religious is more easily worked with. The individual who has faith in God has greater faith in himself. The individual who believes in religious principles has greater tendency to resist demoralization in his own conduct. We find that where a religious person relaxes, his religion is likely to show. Where he is not a religious person and relaxes, nothing shows. There is no available strength released by relaxation, and yet all strength arises in relaxation. Consequently, we have every reason to feel that religion helps the person to fight it out wherever he is. It has a tendency to protect him against self-pity. Because if he is religious, his perspective is changed. An individual who suffers simply because he is in a situation resents both himself and the situation. But a person convinced that his suffering is the result of his dedication to an honorable cause has a great satisfaction in his conviction that his suffering is advancing him as a spiritual being, and that even though others do not recognize it, his keeping faith with God is known and recognized by God. And in every problem that exists, God and man, one man, constitutes a majority. Therefore, what might at first have seemed monotony, now becomes dedication. Well, you can say, what's the difference? That dedication is only another name for monotony. And that the individual is fooling himself. It's still monotony. There's one difference, however. Whether it is dedication or monotony, if he stays with it, it is discipline. If the impulse to run away causes him to leave his dedication or his monotony, then he has definitely injured himself by any code or attitude he may care to hold. Nobody is better because he runs away from reasonable dedication to responsibility. If, however, he stays with it, from whatever motive he may hold, he is a better person. He has strengthened resources. He also has developed a new sense of the recognition of his own dignity. When this person can say honestly that he saw his duty and he did it, this person has a greater sense of personal human dignity. He has more respect for himself. And he also will discover, as time goes along, that other people have more respect for him. And this allegiance to that which is necessary is the highest status symbol in the world. More than the status symbol, however, it is an essential element in personal therapy. If religion, therefore, gets us over the impulse to be irresponsible, it is worth whatever it costs us in time, energy, or contributions. If religion convinces us that we live in a universe of justice and integrity, and that somewhere there is a principle that cannot be deceived, and that that which we earn must inevitably come to us in due time, which is merely a statement of the law of causality, we gradually become responsible persons. As responsible persons, we expect to make decisions. As responsible persons, we also prepare ourselves more adequately. The individual who intends to live a life of evasion has no inducement to prepare himself for anything, unless it might be a safe place to land when he escapes. But the person who is intending to make decision has new encouragement for self-improvement. He has new things to think about, more important than the next television program. In his effort to understand life, he has taken on an interest that will outlive him. He can never understand it all. But as he goes further into it, he will become more aware of its sublimity. One of the reasons why we have so many comparatively irreligious people is because so few look under the surface of things. They are not quiet long enough to contemplate life. They have not reached the degree of insight in which they can sit down quietly under a tree and be completely overwhelmed by the majesty and mystery of existence itself. It is very difficult to live close to life without recognizing the tremendous vitality, the tremendous energy, the incredible wisdom underlying all of the processes of existence. So by taking a decision of responsibility and supporting it in every way that we can, by logical argument, by experience, by tradition, by history, by observation, we gradually begin to make sense out of living. We overcome the superficial either-or attitude of the old Aristotelians. We no longer brush off great masses of humanity as wrong or unimportant. we do not take superficial stock of things. And as we begin to think more, we cannot find as many excuses for our own mistakes. The less we think, the more completely isolated we can become, and the more we can create an imaginary universe and try and live in it. It always cramps us, so we break through and escape into a realm where we have no experience and no preparation. Escape mechanisms cannot solve things, because if we escape from a dilemma, we merely escape into another one. Solution never lies in where we are, but what we are. There is no way in which we can run fast enough to get beyond that kind of a place where trouble can lurk. No matter where we roam or wander, or what part of the world we set about to live a hobo existence in, there is no escape from danger. There is no escape from uncertainty or the possibility of immediate responsibilities. We must either accept them or diminish ourselves to a condition of uselessness and hopelessness. Religion then helps us by giving us what science and even philosophy may not be able to confer. Science certainly cannot at the present time. Philosophy might, but the kind of philosophy that would is not contemporary. You've got to go back to the classics. Because most modern philosophy is generated from disillusionment and is simply another type of frustration. The philosopher is trying to escape by assuming that the universe is meaningless in the first place. Where he is going to escape to in a meaningless universe is not quite clear. Religion still remains as the only dynamic, because it is the one thing, one form of insight, which powerfully stimulates our emotional values. Religion activates our sense of sublimity. It strengthens our realization of beauty. It releases our natural instinct to venerate. It finds its expression in worshipfulness and its peace in the quiet sanctuary. It is a very stable thing, although sometimes it falls into crystallization. But for the person who has never experienced it, it is a very present help in time of trouble. It gives the person the possibility of the quiet, valuable life. And in the long run, the most important thing about living for most people is that while they are alive, they live well. Most persons who have religion have a better record than those who do not, unless they violently and vigorously destroy their own religious integrity. I've known a great many persons who have found in religion the strength for long and useful lives. And during these lives, a continuing veneration, not only for deity, but for their fellow men. That these persons, imbued with the Sermon on the Mount, trying within themselves to continually perpetuate the life of their Messiah, these persons followed some simple injunction. They take up their cross and follow in the footsteps of the Master. They expect a burden, and in carrying that burden with nobility, they sense fulfillment. They have no instinct to escape, For escape would be simply to cast down the cross which their master has bade them to carry. Therefore, to these persons, escape would be the greater ill. Every inducement is to fulfill, to continue a good life. And if the religion is liberal, to continually investigate religious principles so that life may be continuously better and richer. And this very faith by which they live, it will be the faith by which they die. It will be the faith also that causes them to pass out of this world convinced of the reality of eternal life. It will give them no need to escape and will gradually indoctrinate them with the futility of evasion in all its forms. Now, these people are not miserable. Most of them have upon their faces the quietness of a gentle conviction. They are not constantly living in the presence of mortal sin. They have found a pattern or a rule or a guide. And they are living it according to their own insight, which may make them far more liberal than the faiths they belong to. But they do have this tremendous internal security. If we don't find some way of providing this, we must then assume that the next generation will live in perpetual insecurity, because there is no other way in which we can give security to people. How can we give physical security to a world with a hydrogen bomb hanging over it? How can we give scientific security to a world which has already experienced the dedication of scientific skill to the manufacturing of instruments of death? How can we give industrial security? All we can possibly give is a welfare plan. And we're not sure that we could maintain that. We certainly cannot give fulfillment. The only way in which we can give the person a rich life is to enrich his inner life. And by so doing, help him to use his resources according to a high standard of personal idealism. This realization is his reward. He does not need to escape because he has established a dignified relationship with life already. He does not particularly care whether other people agree with him or admire him or not, because he knows within himself what he does to be real and admirable. And if he has these values, some will admire him, and some will understand him, and many will respect him. And this is what constitutes his fulfillment from a social standpoint. So I can say very definitely, from a lot of work with people, that the ones who have made an important religious life for themselves are the ones least likely to be in trouble. And it is the individual who, turning from his own self-development to the criticism of other people, who is in trouble most of the time. We are admonished not to judge, because in whatsoever manner ye judge, so shall it be judged unto you. We are not here to judge, we are here to live. We are not here to depreciate the faith of other people, but to strengthen our own. And this faith is the only way we have of compensating for fear. The kind of fear that makes us run like a rabbit and hide under a bush. And wherever anyone is running away, he is running away from himself. And the only way he can learn to stand up with himself is to develop within his own nature qualities which are admirable, proper, and will bring him his own respect. Thus, escape is dependent entirely on which way you want to go. If you want to escape life, forget responsibility, and dive into some form of dissipation. If you want to escape misery, strengthen character, and move resolutely toward the perfection of your own nature. It is not an escape. No one can escape to reality. All motion toward reality is growth, not escape. All motion away from reality is escape, not growth. You can consider this to be a basic formula. And on this basic formula, we hope you will ponder until this time when we have our next lecture.